The other important question is Eat Out to Help Out returning?
Imagine kept the nation going with.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a long overdue further episode of Somewhere in Between. The First Five and AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony and I'm back with Johannes, Mira and Hatim. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
It's been quite a while since we had a podcast episode. We've had a bit of a hiatus. I think all of us have been incredibly busy over the last couple of months, but it's really good to be back. And I guess the biggest change, I guess, is that I have finished training. And with that, we were all having a chat around what we want to do with the future of the podcast. And, you know, it seemed too much of a shame. It would be a complete fail to break up the gang. So we have decided to continue with an early careers flavor to the podcast. So bringing you everything you need to know about training, as well as everything you need to know about being a first five and the important transition into being a GP. So somewhere in between still stands as a name because we're all navigating that journey somewhere in between, I guess, starting out and finishing and retiring as a GP. So the name sticks. But it's really good to be able to continue this and be talking to all of you guys and for the four of us to keep catching up as well. It's been a really nice part of lockdown and we are still in the midst of lockdown 2.0. So, how are you guys finding everything at the minute?
I mean, first of all, I think we just need to say the three of us basically held Anthony hostage and didn't let him go. But also, it'll be really nice to bring that additional flavour to our podcast. We've obviously got lots of interesting topics coming ahead in the year ahead. And just to get a bit more insight of someone who's newly in the fray, lockdown 2.0, how's that affecting, you know, being a new salaried GP and all the other things that you're doing. So I think we're looking forward to having that twist on it. And also from a slightly biased point of view, we're really glad that all four of us are still doing the podcast and hopefully everyone will still want to listen. I guess for me, an update. So I'm ST2, been doing pediatrics and actually I'm really, really glad it's coming to an end. Sorry, Johannes, because I know Johannes is going on to that next. But just from a rota perspective, it's been pretty hard, but I've learned a lot. Really enjoyed doing pediatrics. I think it's really important to get that flavour of child health because it's so integral to being a general practitioner. And I'm actually going to be moving on to public health, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. How about you, Johannes? How have you been?
Good. I have been, like all of you, incredibly busy. As we were saying earlier, I'm doing some research work with a couple of the COVID vaccine trials alongside my day job, which is psychiatry. I'm also doing some teaching at King's and I'm doing my master's as well. So I am, just exhausted at the moment, but in a very delightful, productive way. So the fact that I'm about to switch into not only Mira's job, but her exact line in the rota does not bode very well. But I'm still feeling optimistic. I think I do quite well in general with those kind of hardcore rotas where you work harder and then you have a few days off. So hopefully I will survive the next few months.
The bright side is the end of the road is near. At some point you will be in ST3 and you won't have to have these horrible rotas. Yes, you'll have to do a little bit of out of hours work, but trust me, it's a lot better. So persevere and you'll be through it. And I think the key thing that I took from our conversation so far is we're still going to be doing this in our 60s and 70s. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to our retired GP Somewhere in Between podcast. That's going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be definitely one to listen to, I guess. Although the technology might have changed by then, we could all probably be like holograms teleporting in from the cool places that we live in space, right?
Or it would have gone back the other way and we'll be back on like a record or a cassette or something.
Or not. Or even better, that we can actually meet up in person and record.
Well, that would be ideal, yeah. We've done one so far, but never one as the four of us. So hopefully in 2021, that's what we've got to look forward to is a reunion of us being able to do that face-to-face, definitely.
Oh, I mean, in other news, I've actually now got a podcast mic in my room. So, you know, if you guys ever want to come here once things normalize, we can even record here.
A podcast mic, nice.
Yeah, it was one of our sort of, so we've got one of these boards. It's a big idea now. You sort of put these boards up and you put lots of goals on the boards of things you want to do. And we put our goals for that, well, by the end of 2020. And I'm not going to share all of them because I'm most likely going to fail with the majority of them. But one of those was to just get a podcast mic and just have a go ourselves. So yeah, maybe I'll sort of plug that in next time. Maybe I'll try using it on this. And like I said, once we get a chance to record all together, we can use this place to record. So let's hope that soon, once things are all right.
I mean, yeah, I can't wait to hear about this end of 2020 list. Maybe you can share it with us as we embark into a new year with vaccines and promises and all sorts galore. So let's see what this holds. But I actually wanted to ask you, I know our last episode sort of focused on you winding down from your role as chair and about the elections. And we obviously have two new co-chairs who have sort of been inducted as of last week and attended their first council meeting. How was that for you, that sort of handing over the mantle, so to speak?
Oh, it's been great. I've had a great year, but I feel very good to have handed it over to two great people, Sophie Lumley and Adam Thomas, who are both ST3s, and I think are going to do a really good job. Unfortunately, we do have to reference that Hatim did take part in the election as well. So massive commiserations. Obviously, Team Podcast, Team Somewhere in Between, we're backing you all the way, but I think Sophie and Adam are hopefully going to do a really fantastic job, and it feels great to know that, it's not me anymore.
Yeah, I mean, a big shout out to Davina who ran with me, and it was a privilege to have that opportunity. And Adam and Sophie, I'm sure, are going to be incredible, and I look forward to supporting them best I can over the year. I still keep telling Anthony that his podcast that he did to try and get people to run was far too enthusiastic. So we'll talk about that for a long time. But it's all good. No, I think I think it's an exciting year ahead, and I think the key thing that obviously we want to get across is if anyone wants to get involved, and this is very much the AIT community. Is very much as it's sort of called, a community for people to come in and really sort of help to sort of increase their skills and get involved in a different way that's often sometimes training doesn't allow.
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think Sophie and Adam are in a really good place to help grow our group and get more people involved. So as Hatim says, if anyone's listening and wants to get involved, just drop us an email and we can always link you up with Sophie and Adam to join the group and get involved in everything that we're up to all the time. But yeah, it feels great to know that when over the next few months, when the next set of big changes come to exams or training or whatever it might be, that I won't have the expectations of a lot of trainees riding on my shoulders. It was great for a year, but I'm sure that Adam and Sophie will be able to enjoy that over the next year. But as you say, like, it was their first council meeting on Saturday. It was a marathon council, as it run, I think, an hour and a half over what it was supposed to. So it was quite the induction for them both. But it was a great meeting. There was like a huge amount on the agenda, as I'm sure you can imagine, when it runs over so much. One of the big topics was all around GP appraisal. So obviously when we finish training, we still have to go through the appraisal and revalidation process at present anyway. It was suspended during COVID, and it was really just a motion that was brought thinking about the long-term value of appraisal and revalidation. Has it kind of answered the problem that it was created to do? What should we be doing in the future? This is obviously a great time to kind of reflect on if it's the right way to be going about it. And and that's going to be taken further following discussions that happen there. But as well as that, there was loads on the agenda, obviously COVID updates. There was a whole other host of new faces at council following the recent national elections for council members a few months ago. So there was 8 or 9 new faces there, which was fantastic to see, lots of new energy. And I think hopefully, I'm going to speak on their behalf, but I think Sophie and Adam enjoyed it, getting to see the type of conversation that happens there. It's always an interesting debate. And hopefully going to see the outcomes of lots of the discussion that happened there over the coming month.
Yeah, that's great. And I think also we've already spoken to them, but we're going to be doing an upcoming episode with Sophie and Adam at some point, just so that they can speak to, you know, I'm going to say our hundreds of listeners. You know, from Chile and Peru, we've been given the optics, haven't we, Bryn? So from that perspective, it'll be really good for for the new co-chairs to sort of speak to everyone about their vision for the upcoming 12 months and to see. And as you said, Anthony, obviously, I'm sure as we've talked about COVID a lot on our podcast episodes, but it would be a bit remiss of us to not, I guess, bring it up. I think Bojo's giving his announcement currently as we're recording about us coming out of lockdown 2.0 and going into tiers and maybe what the plans will be for everybody's Christmases. But actually, that's a question. What at the moment does, what do you guys have planned for Christmas, if anything? Johannes?
Pediatrics.
Are you working? Have you seen your rota?
No, I'm not actually working on Christmas Day, but I think I'm working closely enough to either side that I probably won't do anything particularly exciting. But I'll just have a couple of chill days, maybe go out for a bike ride.
I've worked, I think, a few Christmases, and it's always an interesting time to be in the hospital, isn't it? Because it's almost, you know, everyone's really like festive and really enthusiastic because you've got to make the best of it. It's when you're in work on Christmas Day. But again, I guess I'm happy that that will not happen again unless I choose to. That's always nice. I mean, you get these out of hours doctors that absolutely love working Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have their reasons.
Or unless we're all doing the COVID vaccination on Christmas Day.
Well, I mean, that was the thing that I was going to come out with next is I think COVID vaccination rollout is a really hot topic for everyone involved in primary care at the moment, just in terms of logistics, how we're expected to do it on top of, I'm sure, Hatim, Anthony, you're in primary care at the moment with the flu clinics and everything else that you're being expected to do. How do we think this is going to sort of pan out? Obviously, we need to watch what happens, but, and what are your feelings on this whole COVID vaccination rollout with GPs being at the sort of helm of delivering it all nationally?
I guess I'm in two minds. Obviously, I think a COVID vaccine can't come soon enough. Can't wait to have it. Think it's going to be incredible. Would encourage everybody to have it once we've got all of the, you know, the necessary data and safety information and we're all ready to go. I guess in terms of GP being responsible for delivering a large proportion of the vaccinations, I think we're fairly primed to be able to do a good vaccination rollout, given that we do the flu vaccination every year. This is obviously a bit of a different beast, but I think particularly now that we've had like primary care networks come together for over a year, so they're really starting to mature. Those relationships between practices have started to form much better than they were at their outset. So I think hopefully PCNs are going to be in a really good position to deliver the vaccination. Obviously, there are always, you know, the financial pressures, workforce pressures, which I think are, you know, really important to appreciate. You know, if you take a GP or any member of the healthcare team out of general practice to do vaccinations, then it means that the work that they'd normally be doing isn't happening. And so we do have to, I guess, make sure that we've got the balance right between delivering standard general practice and the vaccination. Hopefully we'll be able to do both with the, you know, additional funding that's been put in place, with the drive to get more people upskilled to be able to deliver the vaccinations. But I think GPs are in a really prime position to deliver it. I think that GPs should be in a really in the hot seat to kind of help convince a lot of patients to get the vaccine as well. I'm sure there's going to be a huge number of people who feel quite apprehensive around getting a vaccination. We're not talking about like the anti-vax brigade, but just, you know, kind of general people who might normally get a flu vaccination or, you know, would get their kids vaccinated, but are understandably nervous about a whole new vaccination, which they see as, you know, coming to be delivered very quickly. So I think hopefully that we as GPs can really utilize the trust and those important relationships that we have with our patients to convince them, hopefully once we've got all of the information, that it's the right thing to do and that it can really benefit our populations and communities we look after.
The logistics are going to be very interesting, and I think it'll take some time for that to be fleshed out. But I think that second point that you raised, Anthony, is really important, because I think we're going to get a lot of questions from our patients. And I feel like I've already had it with one or two patients about vaccine. Is it safe? And it's not just patients, actually. I think family members, friends are all sort of starting to ask those questions as well. And it puts us in a quite unique position to be advising on something that we essentially have similar information to the rest of the rest of the population on, in terms of the information that's out there, that's been put out there in data and it's out there in news. I guess the role that we can play is to look a bit more further into the data and use that evidence-based practice knowledge that we have to help inform and support that decision. and to, and you know, and there will be some GPs out there who will have personal opinions about these things and have some uncertainties themselves and anxieties themselves about the vaccine. And again, I think one of the key things for us will be to ensure that it doesn't impact our practice in helping our patients make an informed decision on this. So I think that's going to be a really interesting challenge for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think interesting challenge is definitely a good way to phrase it. And also, I guess, looking back in my medical career, I can probably speak safely for all four of us, is that a rollout of something on this scale that is newly developed isn't something any of us have come across. But even in the lifetimes of many people who've worked in the NHS, this sort of scale of operation, specifically within the UK, isn't something that has been seen before. But Johannes, you probably have a bit of a different take to it than the rest of us, probably from a bit of the extra work that you're doing on with the vaccination sort of thing.
Yeah, so I only spend about one day a week doing the vaccine work, and it's fairly kind of top level. I don't get that involved in the actual research. It's just screening participants. But I do get a good flavour of, you know, how people are feeling, what kind of questions are coming up. And this is a population of people who volunteered to have a trial medication. So they're kind of, you know, they're not the end of the population who are sceptical or particularly nervous. You know, they're willing to you know, risk an arm for science. And for the rest of the UK and for Christmas. But there's still lots of questions just because, as you say, it's a new technology. The mRNA vaccines are a completely new concept, and it certainly raised a lot of questions about, you know, is this something that will affect my DNA? It's just a whole new area. And I think even as doctors, if we don't have a basic understanding of what the vaccines are doing, then just that little bit of uncertainty in the way we describe it can maybe just unsettle a patient. So I think it's really important that we have just a basic understanding of what these vaccines are doing. And obviously there are non-RNA vaccines that are coming out as well, like the Oxford one. So I think, like you say, it's going to be interesting to see how they decide which vaccines go to which patients, or whether it's just first come, first serve in terms of which vaccine is offered. And I think we're just going to face so many challenges in terms of who gets vaccinated, how we do it, because we've got to vaccinate the care homes first. I think that's the vague plan at the moment, and then we're going down in age groups. But another point I wanted to make was just that I think we've got a huge wealth of retired GPs and retired doctors and nurses who also are very keen to step up. Loads of them volunteered to come out of retirement to help when we were opening the Nightingale Hospitals. And I think some of them were maybe not quite ready to kind of give that level of support when things were really unknown, but are definitely voted support from our kind of retired colleagues, both in medicine and nursing.
Oh, Johannes, you're posing Bryn some technical
challenges. I can see you wincing there. I think that's... Sorry, I could see you wincing. I assume that was my connection going a bit.
A little bit, but I think we got the gist.
We got the gist, definitely. I think with the vaccination, also, I don't know, I heard someone mention this the other day, and it definitely got me thinking, why can't we just train patients to give themselves their own vaccination? They can give them two, like, a dose, and they can do it. Patients get trained all the time to do, like, deliver their own injections for many other things. And we're training up, you know, other lay people to be able to deliver, to take part in the vaccination program as volunteers. In some ways, you know, could we not trust patients to be able to deliver their own vaccination in some situations? Would that help? I don't know. But I think
it's definitely... Post it to a patient.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting concept, Anne. I mean, I don't know. I suppose a patient population that has already not bought in, but is sort of pro the concept of a vaccination, with some of the vaccinations that you need two injections, being aware of what you need to do and what to look out for. Perhaps some people would have an appetite for that. I suspect the majority of the public, as Hatem has said, you know, there's already some consternation globally anyway, isn't there? And unfortunately, due to the spreading of misinformation about sort of nefarious ways in which a vaccine has been brought to light, or whether there is a conspiracy behind it all, and then putting it in the hands of a public, I guess. The other thought behind it is that the procurement of these vaccinations is not cheap in any way whatsoever. So to ensure that resources aren't wasted, and that there's effective delivery of it, so that we get enough immunity required. I wonder whether that would be maybe something to go against it, but definitely a really intriguing thought. I hadn't even thought of it.
Yeah, I think adherence is the key concern there. For me, you never know if an individual is actually going to actively use it properly and administer it properly. What you are saying, Anthony, is we need to think a little bit outside of the box here and try and use our resources as effectively as possible. Now, of course, we won't be making those decisions in the positions that we're currently in, but it's nice for us to sort of have that thought, and actually, because in the future, some of us will be partners and therefore we'll be responsible for making some of these decisions or supporting some of those decisions. And therefore, it's sometimes nice to sort of start to thrash that out and have those discussions.
A slight segue here. Johannes was shaking his head when we were talking about being a partner. And I think actually we had a really interesting VTS teaching session last week, and it was from an accountant who deals with medical finances of GPs, specifically about partners. And she was sort of talking through contracts and what you should look at and the accounts and a lot of maths and various other things. I mean, if anything, she really sold the idea that you need a medical accountant, didn't she, Johannes? But I suppose I had never really thought, even at this stage, about what it would mean to be a partner. I think lots of people in sort of stages of GP training, specifically maybe in ST1 and ST2, you think of the end of the road being that you've passed your exams and that you're going to be joining to a practice that you hopefully get on with, that you're able to take interest in maybe other things that you want to do outside in the maybe a portfolio career or even salaried or locum. But that end goal of, for some people, of becoming a partner, it's something I hadn't really considered. And Johannes, you're shaking your head on the offset. It's something not for you right now, right?
I don't hate the idea. But I think unless you really love the business I think you have to love it for the business. Because there are so many other ways to make money in GP. If money is your focus, I think there are just more interesting, exciting ways to achieve that. But if you're really excited about running a business and shaping the way the practice runs, I think it can be a really exciting opportunity. But I think as one of our program directors described it, it's like a marriage. And for me... for personal reasons, that's something I'm going to avoid at the moment.
I mean, coming to that, though, actually, I sense a future episode on this, actually. Us maybe just thinking a bit more about sort of the career pathway options as a GP and actually discussing the pros and cons of partnership, because I think that's something that we don't often have that information at hand, unless your VTS has organised something, especially early career GPs. You kind of have to go and find that information yourself when you're a first five and really get a feel for things yourself. So it might be nice to get a bit of insight in that topic at some point.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah, now that we've got a grown up.
When we're a bit more grown up, yeah. And I was just going to say, Ant, you sort of went from your ST3 practice to now being a salaried doctor at your practice. How has that transition been?
Fairly a kind of anticlimactic, to be honest. It's exactly the same as it was before. It's nice to know, I don't know, that you're a qualified GP working there. It was an amazing achievement. I feel really happy and proud about it. But the actual workload is exactly the same, seeing the same patients, dealing with the same problems. But, the reality is that I feel really fortunate to have been in my training practice, now my proper practice. It's a great place to work. I really like the community that we look after. And yeah, I think it's a really good team. So really happy that I get to stay. But it doesn't change drastically when you finish, I guess, unless you're, going through a big upheaval, moving different areas or to a very different type of GP practice. But yeah, otherwise it's all been fairly the same. Main thing I've been struggling with is after a few weeks off, I always go like much slower. So I'm just still catching up with my pre-annual leave speed. But yeah, no, it's good. It's nice to be back. And yeah, it feels slightly different.
I mean, I'm loving the positivity.
And that seems to be a common theme, people sort of staying on in their training practice.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not for everyone. It doesn't happen to everyone, but it's nice to have that opportunity, I assume, Anthony.
Yeah, 100%. I think the main thing that's, to me anyway, a positive difference is like they don't have a supervisor anymore. So if I'm running late, I don't feel guilty that I'm like keeping somebody else at work. They can just people can just do what they want, and I don't have to worry about me, which is good to not feel like, you know, to feel like you've got that independence, I guess, is a good thing. And it's, you know, the reality is that I work in a really nice practice where if you do have questions or you're not sure what's happening, it's like natural there for the GPs to ask each other you know, about difficult cases or issues they've run into. So it doesn't get rid of that kind of safety net that you've got from your colleagues, but without having to ever feel like a burden or really feel like you have to speed up just because you know that someone else is watching over your shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, I guess what we've really established is that the 12 months, well, not even the 12 months that we've been doing this, it feels like 12 months, doesn't it, guys? But sort of the 8-9 months that we've been doing this, a whole heap of things have happened. And I think we've covered loads of different topics, with COVID being the sort of thread that's tying it all together and probably will do for the next couple of months. But we really would like anyone who's listening who feels that they have something to contribute, maybe it's thoughts on a vaccination or any worries, or even we were talking about employability in terms of salaried versus being a partner and all of those things. If those are topics you'd want to listen to, or there are other things that you would be interested to hear about from an AIT or First Five perspective, then do let us know. We've got we will have an email account, because I guess our email might need to change now, Ant, will it?
I guess so, yeah. Well, maybe we'll have to get a somewhere in between email account that people can get in touch with us on. That might be the best way to go about it. So
definitely. We'll put that. keep field for that. We'll put that in the description. And again, we are all on Twitter, so if you did want to sort of get in contact with us that way, then that's a way to go forwards as well. I can't remember everyone's Twitter handle. That's really bad, isn't it?
They'll be in the description. Just check it out there. One thing that I've been enjoying from the last few weeks of lockdown though, Mira, is your late night baking on your Instagram stories. It's been I've enjoyed the couple of occasions I've seen it on there.
I mean, so it was never something that started off intentionally as to be a series whatsoever. So we have been, my husband and I have been following Bake Off, obviously. And given the fact that we know nothing about baking, I found that we've got very strong opinions on what's happening on a TV show. Often, you know, shouting at the TV and my husband saying, this isn't fair and all of these things. And I thought, actually, maybe we should kind of give it a go ourselves and see if we can make those bold claims. So I'm not going to lie, we started off really hard. Sandro said he wanted to make some eclairs. Given the fact that he doesn't know what choux pastry was, it wasn't a good start. So that was an interesting one. And I've never actually felt as popular in my life with loads of Instagram people coming in and being like, oh, this is great, you should make another one. I was like, we can't make another one. There can't be anything interesting to do. So very briefly, I'll tell you. So last week we decided to make marble cake. And I was like, this is going to be very boring. Not many people will want to watch this. And then I turned around and saw Sanj with his hand in a bowl of butter and sugar, squishing it. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, the instructions said mix by hand. So I feel that there's probably a bit more scope for our baking skills to improve. But it's been definitely something interesting to do at lockdown whilst we're home.
The marble cake looked like it came out okay.
Yeah. Is there going to be a crossover episode with the new air fryer? That's what I want to know.
Oh, well, I mean, let's see. Yeah, so the Black Friday deals sort of obviously were up and around last week, this week, and somehow we have obtained a huge, looks like a spaceship air fryer. I'll keep you updated. I think there's some cacophony going on in the kitchen right now, so God knows what I'll go into. I'll keep you updated.
Well, I've got one of those instant pots, and I think they're great. And then there's one that actually has an air fryer as well. It's like literally a jack of all trades. It does absolutely everything. And I think that's really cool. So yeah, let me know how it goes, because it's on the horizon. And my wife, you know, perks of not working in the NHS is that she gets a Christmas present from her work, and they have a whole catalogue of things that she can order, I think of which one is an air fryer, which we were considering. So we're going to have to make our way through that catalogue soon, and maybe we need to give it a week or two for you to feedback on the success stories.
I'll definitely let you know. I mean, if I can healthily fry it, I'll do it. I mean, I won't, but I'll give it a go.
Mira, who do you want to win Bake Off? That's what we need to know.
oh, is that contentious? Will I get Twitter trolled for it? I don't know. So, well, my favourites have left, so, yeah, which is probably why I've been shouting quite a bit at the TV. I guess of the three who now remain in the competition, I mean, I wouldn't be mad if any of them won. Have I kind of lost my complete interest? I'm intrigued just to see what they're going to make, because the final is tomorrow. And I'm not spawned, promise. And I don't know. Pete, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's been the most consistent. This isn't a Bake Off podcast. But yeah. I agree, though. Like, my favourites have gone, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Johannes is just looking at us blankly. I'm assuming that this Bake Off isn't made it to your most watched list, Johannes.
No, I love a bit of Bake Off. I was just seeing if Boris had actually managed to start talking, because he's famously normal.
Oh, no, Johannes, the connection is not the one today. But I guess with sorry, that... And with Zoom lagging and everyone else finishing a long day, maybe we should call it a day for this episode.
I think that sounds like a plan. you've got your air fryer dinner to have. I will be looking forward to the Bake Off final tomorrow, and then catching up with you guys for the next episode. As I say, we're gonna be having Adam and Sophie, the new AIT chairs, on very shortly to talk about their hopes for the year ahead. We've got plenty more other stuff that we want to cover. Obviously, COVID will never be far behind in vaccinations, but there's going to be loads more for us to talk about over the coming weeks and months. So look forward to catching up with you guys next time. And thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you very soon for another episode of Somewhere in Between. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
We should call that one the one with the terrible connection.